Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Today, I think we will hopefully complete that idea. Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day, because we're going to talk today about times of transition. Here's a quote from a college student in the middle of her senior year. She said, "I feel like I'm at the finish line with no place to go." Now, today we're going to talk about transitions out of college. You know, this is a time when most of us are focusing on students facing the new school year. We're going to look beyond. Up ahead, a conversation about navigating transitions, relationships, and faith. And let me just say that even if you're not a recent college grad, there's going to be application for all of us because, you know, we all go through times of transition and we need help with our relationships and our faith. So more coming up on that. Ted, was it graduated from college? You look back. Did you know exactly what you're going to do and jump right in?
So, no, I didn't, yeah. Actually. God had some good plans for me, though. I went on a music ministry team right after college, a little unique circumstance, but I learned a lot throughout that year and a half and just really grew in my faith that year and a half. And had I done anything else, I'm not sure where I'd be, honestly. Yeah. So you look back and go, wow, God had his hand in that.
And did your parents encourage you to pursue that? Or?
They did. At first, my mom was a little hesitant, had some questions. Namely, her first response is, "Have you prayed about this?" And I thought, well, is it a quick prayer? Or maybe should
sure,
do a little more.
Yeah, pray, yeah.
Give up a year and a half of your life, you know.
Spent a little extra time before I ate my sandwich, you know, just
yeah, right.
So, we'll get into all those things about praying and decision-making. All that conversation. It took me a long time to get through college. Dropped out halfway through and went back to finish. And I was always inspired and encouraged by Muhammad Ali. The words of Muhammad Ali said, "Stay in college, get the knowledge, stay there till you're through. If they can make penicillin out of moldy bread, they can make something out of you."
So, yes, I've heard that. That's a good one.
Kind of just encouraged me along the way. So.
Yes, very good. He's that's a great quote. Very good quote.
Well, we're going to get some thoughts about, you know, one of the good habits we should keep up to is reading and studying God's Word, regardless of where we are in our season of life. So we'll talk about that coming up in a moment. But just a quick reminder that our Fall Share-a-thon, Fall Share, gets underway next week, and we're looking forward to hearing from you, whether you listen to one of our radio signals around the upper Midwest or in Hartford, or you may be streaming online. And it's just been amazing, Ted, to see the huge growth, if you would use the word huge.
Incredible. Did we discover like about 50% of our audience is online?
There's a significant number that are joining us online, streaming online. So if you're one of those, welcome. Love to have you listening in. And just a reminder, if you want to download our Faith Radio app, it would be great to have you join in with us there as well. You can go to the iTunes Store or Google Play, or you can get a link on our website as well to get the Faith Radio Network app. And it's something where you can enjoy all the great programming here on Faith Radio day in and day out. So I encourage you to consider that. Faith Radio app, you can find a link about that online at myfaithradio.com. And again, Fall Share getting underway next week. And this is a listener-supported ministry, so we do rely on your generosity to keep us moving forward. All right, coming up in a minute, we're going to talk after college, navigating transitions, relationships, and faith. Stay tuned.
Make time for the Word every day. For the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. With the kids back at school hitting the books, now is a great time for us to recommit to hitting the book every day. If you've let your Bible reading slide for a while, here are a few ways to get going again. First, find a reading plan. The random fall open method of reading the scripture ensures we'll miss the context of whatever it is we're trying to read. Biblica has a terrific reading plan that's part of their community Bible experience. Which brings up the second idea. Get someone to join you. Read together, out loud, or just keep each other accountable. Or if you're a liturgically minded sort, the Anglican Church in North America posts its lectionary online, as do the Catholic bishops. Then there's the ESV's daily reading Bible online with an Old and New Testament reading along with a psalm. Whatever tool you use to get into Scripture every day, do it. But of course, don't forget to ask the Lord to give you ears to hear and eyes to see what He wants you to. With today's point, I'm John Stone Street.
8 minutes after the hour, looking forward to opening up a conversation about transitions, times of moving on from one stage to another, talking after college. That's a new book just out from my guest today, Erica Young writes. Erica directs Senior Exit. It's a one-year experience that prepares graduating college seniors for the transition into the next phase of life. And she works for the Coalition for Christian Outreach in partnership with Calvary Church, reaching out to students at Penn State University. Erica has an MA in higher education from Geneva College with a graduate research focus on the senior year transition, and she's authored the new book, After College, Navigating Transitions, Relationships, and Faith. Erica, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thanks so much, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Well, so let's talk a little about, you know, the years after college, some of the most uncertain, unstable times in our life. What is it about leaving college that seems to be so disconcerting?
Yeah, I think several things. One, I think oftentimes there's a gap between maybe what we expect that transition to be like and then what actually happens during the transition. And we may not even realize we have those expectations, whether it's, I just hope I'm going to find friends instantly and easily, or I'm going to love my job right out of college. I think oftentimes that gap can be pretty big, and I'm really trying to help our seniors close out a little bit. Also, I think just so many things shift at once. This is the first time for many people where even the role as a student, that changes. Even going to grad school, I think the role is different. But I think when everything is shifting at once, friendship, financial situation, opportunities for fun, even our career, all of that is changing at once. It can be really overwhelming.
Was this your experience, and so you have a particular passion for this area?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely personal. My transition out of college wasn't the smoothest, and I had a great college experience, you know, strong faith, a good head on my shoulders, supportive family members, and I'd still say my transition was bumpy, and maybe that's even an understatement, in just ways I hadn't really prepared to consider. And I know I'm not alone, and part of writing after college was, you know, certainly personal, but also from my professional experience of working with students for the last, you know, this is my 13th year in college ministry, and seeing this narrative again and again of that first year is often the hardest year of people's lives up to that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got several copies of your book to give away. Thanks to University Press for making those available whenever we have resources. We love to give them away as a drawing, and so we do that at the end of the hour. And just want to encourage listeners, if this is something that you know someone that could really make use of this, and I think we probably all do, or you'd like to just read it, a lot of wonderful insight here in the book After College, and we'll invite you to just call Carissa and give us your contact information, and then we'll do the drawing. Got six copies we can give away, five copies anyway, at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. I was wondering, Erica, it seems like schools overemphasize career and placement over everything else. So is it sort of all about the job? I mean, it looks good for the college or the university. Say, well, yeah, we place so many X number of people and, you know, this percentage. So you come here, you're going to get a job. Is it all about the job?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have kind of two thoughts on that. One, if you're at Penn State, yes, it's all about the job. And it's not just the job, it's a good job, whatever that means. Oftentimes it's like I get paid a lot, maybe to not do a lot. So we talk a lot about what is even the, quote, good job. But I think it's really easy when it becomes all about the job to really reduce the transition out of college to a checklist of, like, has my resume look good? Check. Do I have an interview or a job offer? Check. And the transition is so multifaceted that if we reduce it just to the job or the career, we're missing a huge, huge parts of the transition. But I also know from my experience that I went to a small Christian liberal arts college, and I think that sometimes we're not sure how to connect our college experience to a vocation. Like, what do I do next? I'm an English major, like, what am I supposed to be after here? And so I think there's also that gap. And then there's just, I think, culturally going on this, you know, a four-year degree isn't easily translating into a viable vocation. And so that expectation that even, you know, degrees that normally would have translated, okay, this is a skill I'm acquiring and it's going to easily translate into a job placement. That's not happening. And so what do I do when I leave here and, I'm wearing a green apron and selling lattes? You know, where is God in that? And are we preparing students for some of the reality that they may not work that dream job right out of college or even in the first 5 years out of college?
We'll circle back and talk a little bit more about the job and vocation, the career and calling, some of those things as well, as we talk about relationships and faith. But maybe we should back up a bit, because you addressed early on about the importance of ending well or finishing strong, that, you know, there may be some, you know, families listening now with seniors. This is their final year and they're kind of like, you know, I'm done, you know, even though I still got to put in a whole year worth of coursework. What's your encouragement to finish strong?
Yes, to do it, for sure, to finish strong. I think it can be so easy to just check out. Like, I'm, you know, and we do this in not just with graduation, but so many things in our lives. We just want to kind of get on to the next thing and the next thing. I remember meeting with a senior. I mean, she was ready to graduate in fall of senior year, and she had she was engaged to be married, so the wedding was at the end of the year and kind of looking forward to that. And again and again, our conversations were about, like, how can you finish strong and be present? We took a look at all of the roles that she plays on campus and said, what does it mean to finish strong in these roles? Let's make a faithfulness game plan. How do I be faithful in my coursework, in my relationship with my family? And that's a lot of what we like to talk about with students, is just what does faithfulness look like, and how do we finish strong in a culture that doesn't always emphasize that? It's like getting on to the next thing. And so we look to Christ. He was a finisher, and really committing for the grit to end well, ending relationships well, ending leadership roles well, passing on to the next people, you know, who will hold the baton beyond our time. I think all of that we want to consider.
We'll talk in the moments ahead about, you know, endings and new beginnings, and how do we not jump into the first thing that comes our way. We're dealing with navigating transitions, relationships, and faith. That's the subtitle of a wonderful new book called After College. And, you know, and even if it's not directly related to your stage in life at the moment, you'll find some great insight here as well. Erica Young Wrights is the director of Senior Exit. She works at the Penn State University in a ministry there in partnership with the Calvary Church and the Coalition for Christian Outreach. And has written this helpful resource, After College. We've got some copies to give away, and you can sign up for one of those at 877-933-2484. Four or five copies available at 877-93-FAITH. And it may be that you have a question, too, about maybe a young adult in your family that's maybe going through some transition time, some questions about it, or maybe you are in a transition season and you'd just like to get some advice or maybe share a comment about your experience. You can always give us a call and join in the conversation, 877-93-FAITH. Or if it's more convenient and you want to drop us a note, you can go to myfaithradio.com, then click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email link there. You can submit your question that way, and we'll talk more with Erica Young Wrights in just a moment. For decades. I'm not sure when that song came out, 20 years ago or so, but we're still trying to find our place in this world, and especially when that world changes, we move from college to whatever's next. We're talking about that today with Erica Young Wrights, directs Senior Exit. It's a one-year experience that prepares graduating college seniors for transition into the next phase of life, and she's written the book After College, Navigating Transitions, Relationships, and Faith. And these can be kind of uncertain times. We just touched on, Erica, a little bit about, you know, before we start something new, we have to end well. And there's sometimes a time between an ending and a new beginning. Say a bit about that between time.
Yeah, I think the in-between time is often the most awkward. Again, especially because our culture doesn't really teach us to be in those in-between fallow spaces really well. It can be a time where it feels like nothing's happening and we're so used to accomplishing things or things moving forward that it can be hard to put ourselves in that in-between time and really be present in it. I think it's a time where we often ask, did I make a mistake? Is something wrong? Did I mess up by moving here or taking this job offer? And I think we really need to be mindful that just because something feels disorienting or distressing, it doesn't mean like we need to go somewhere else. That's a really typical emotion to feel in an in-between time. And then to really push through that time to get to the other side, but to be willing to be present in it, to not like quit our jobs in the middle of it because we're in transition.
Is pushing through something that we want to do within community? Are there some practical ways that we can, in fact, you know, not give up and question everything that we've done so far?
Yeah, I think that's so key. I'm so glad you bring that up. I don't know how we do this alone. And I think it's really challenging right after college when we are kind of reestablishing ourselves in community, maybe, finding new community for the first time or reworking ourselves into a fabric of a former community if we move back home. But I think that we cannot do it alone. And for many of our alums, it's kind of reaching back maybe into a former community with one hand while we also reach into that new community, even though we don't feel very comfortable yet. And we're kind of willing to be okay with like kind of be comfortable with uncomfortable for a time because those are the people God's put in our path in that new space. And I don't know how we do it alone. And I do know for many of our students, I think about a student who moved to Boston and, I mean, a real gregarious student. He, made friends so easily in undergrad and really struggled to make friends in his new location, didn't know a single person. And, I think a big part of that year for him, he would say, was just deepening his relationship with God, that it was like, I'm going to either sink or swim here. And I know just the communing with the Lord was so important during that time. And I hear that story again and again of the relationship with God growing closer because the community is harder to find right after college.
Well, we'll talk more about the relationships as well as we go along because loneliness is kind of a big part of it, right? I mean, we lose our kind of core group many times, right? And, spread out all across the country. So how do we deal with loneliness and handle relationships after college?
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part of it is just going in with the expectation that it's going to take time to make friends and that's a normal part of the transition. I think for many of our alums, that's one of their biggest fears is I'm not going to find friends right away. And I think if we can say it may be challenging, it's not going to necessarily happen instantly, organically, or easily. And so if they're prepared for that reality, the guy who moved to Boston, he said, Friday nights would come around and I didn't have people to hang out with. So I would like start ironing my clothes for Monday morning. And that is a picture of some of us in life after college. So one, I think preparing for that. And then two, to know even in the loneliness, we're not alone, that there's a long history of people who have gone before us. There's alums all over the nation and world who are struggling to find their footing right after college. And most importantly, that Christ is with us, that God has not left us or forsaken us. His character doesn't change in the transition, and we're not alone. And the new thing does come. The in-between time is challenging and awkward and empty a lot of the times, but the new thing does come. And I just talked to an alum emailing with him who came through our program last year, and that was one of his biggest fears was that I would not find friends. And it turns out that he got connected to a local church right away, which is something I would strongly encourage, that's where we're going to – our primary place where we're going to find community. And got connected to this local church and wound up in a life group with another senior who went through our program. So I just love the way God provided for him and dealt with some of those fears that he had of not finding a friend. So it will happen.
Because it's pretty easy if we get in a work situation or something, just hang out with friends, and suddenly we're going to the sports bar every Friday night or Saturday or whatever. And that, how important is getting committed to a local church? Is that really going to make a difference?
Yeah, and I know there's probably listeners all out there with different perspectives, but my guess is you're tuning in because you value your relationship with Christ, and I don't think there's a better place to keep cultivating that than within the community of the local church. And I feel very strongly about equipping our students to connect to a local church, and we even try to challenge the paradigm. At Penn State, there's this encouragement of, and everywhere, go for that job, wherever you get that job. And in this economic time, we're often moving for the job, but we sort of shift that a little bit and say, what would you consider moving for a church community or for a church plant, or allowing that to really guide your search, and to not assume that just any location anywhere, there's a plethora of gospel preaching Christ-centered churches, to really seek that out before you make the move and ask, is this a community where I can thrive beyond college? Are there going to be places where there's other people on mission and I can join them? And so we are huge advocates for helping students really think through that local church decision even before they make a move. I remember sitting down with a student. He had two job offers and was like, Erica, which one should I take? And I said, if you're going to move to this location, I think you're going to find it really spiritually dry and challenging. And that became a factor in his decision making, and he actually went for the other job in a location where he knew he would thrive.
Is there one thing you'd recommend to a church to have an effective ministry for the young transitioning after college adult?
Yeah, I think there's big questions of whose job is it to help people transition, and I think everyone can have a part. And when our alums thrive, everybody wins. Our churches win, our communities win, our neighborhoods win. And so I think one of the best things that churches can do and members of churches can do is just look for those people in your midst. They're probably hesitant to introduce themselves, and you may find them even hesitant to get connected to a local church. We know the stats on 20-somethings leaving the church. And so be that person that of peace, that welcoming voice who can just help them get connected. And we know the number one reason why students stay connected to the church is because of relationships. And so just being a friend to students in this time, I think one thing we're doing at our church is just helping connect our students to mentors, even mentors by major of, here's a student going into engineering, helping him, connect to another engineer in our church who can talk about, here's some of the opportunities and challenges of being a Christian and an engineer. There's so many places. Share your financial wisdom with our 20-somethings. But I think most importantly, just be a friend.
Good words from Erica Young Wright. We're talking of practical help in navigating transitions, relationships, and faith. That's the subtitle of a new book called After College. Erica Young Wright directs Senior Exit. It's a one-year experience that prepares graduating college seniors for transition into the next phase of life, working out of a Penn State University along with the Coalition for Christian Outreach in partnership with Calvary Church. We've got some copies of the book to give away. Love to put one in your hands. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number, 877-933-2484. You can sign up for one of the five copies of the book we'll give away. And coming back after the break, we'll talk a little bit about decision-making, some principles there. Want to get into relationships. What happens if you didn't find your mate in college? What next? We'll get to all that with Erica Young Wright in just a moment. That's where we are. All of us are in at some point of transition, but specifically today we're focusing on those that have just transitioned from life as a college senior to life in whatever. And some of those years after college can be some of the most uncertain and unstable times of life, and maybe more so today with the economy as it is and lots of grads moving back home and just kind of managing all that and lots of relational pressures in a society that is kind of all about hookups, it seems like. So we're getting some wise counsel and advice today from Erica Young Wright, who has spent a number of years working with helping prepare graduating college seniors for the transition into the next phase of life. A program called Senior Exit operates out of Penn State University through the Coalition for Christian Outreach and in partnership with Calvary Church And Erica has written a new book called After College. And so, Erica, we're talking a little bit about challenges that graduating seniors face. It's deciding what to jump into next and maybe not jump into the first thing. College debt is sort of hanging over us, that the student loans come and due here. So do we take the first job we find? Talk about some decision-making principles. Were there some things that helped you, or what do you recommend to students you work with?
Sure. I think the decision-making of, like, what is next can be so overwhelming, especially because students are often making so many decisions at once. Do I take this job? Do I move to that location? Do I stay close to my girlfriend or boyfriend? Do I go back home? I mean, there's just so many decisions. Do I go to grad school? And I think one thing is just figuring out what is, like, one of the decisions I'm making. I think any time in my life where I've had to make a big decision, it's, you know, just discerning what is the actual decision and breaking it down into these different decisions. And they all affect each other, of course. I think a big thing we talk about with our students is just oftentimes we kind of pit decisions wrongly against one another as, like, this direction is failure and this direction is success, and we have to, like, kind of wring our hands to figure out what's the success decision. And we really try to give them a grid for decision making that brings in freedom in Christ in decision making and takes away some of that wrong thinking about, like, you know, this is the only one right decision. Sometimes they have to choose between two really good offers, and God may be pleased with either one. It's not that one is wrong and one is right, or one success and one failure, or, oh, if I go here, I'm going to miss the person I'm supposed to marry, or if I go there, I'll meet the person I'm supposed to marry. Like, just that, you know, helping them understand God's character and a biblical approach to decision making, I think is really how we try to encourage our students.
Well, you mentioned the marriage issue. So if we haven't found our mate in college, has the window closed?
I sure hope not. No, I do bring that up in the book because I have found that is a fear of a lot of our students. And now, granted, there's, you know, unless they go into a fellows program or a really built-in community beyond college, there's probably no other time in our lives where we're surrounded by so many people in the same life stage, asking some of the same questions and fears and concerns. But I want to just talk to any listener out there who's afraid the window has closed or is closing right after college. It is not closed. It's far from closed. I know even from my own personal story, I didn't meet Craig till we got married when I was 28, and I watched many friends get married before me. I think there was one summer we had like 12 weddings right after college. A lot of my friends did meet their spouse in college, and that's a wonderful thing. And I encourage our students, if they've, you know, found someone, like, you don't have to wait, you know, 5 years to marry that person. Like, I think if you're thinking of waiting 5 years, that's probably not the person. So the window has not closed. I want to encourage our listeners on that. And, I mean, more and more people are, you know, even delaying marriage, and I think we need to evaluate what are our motivations for that. If we are, or if we're all about that relationship, what are our motivations there? So there's so much we could talk about on this topic, but I think that if we don't hit this topic, we're missing a huge concern of our 20-somethings.
Well, as you mentioned, you're not getting married till 28. I mean, that's common now, which means that a lot of young adults are facing maybe increased sexual temptation that probably wasn't so a couple of generations ago. How do you navigate those kind of relationships when and the importance of maybe dating the right person with the right values?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I've watched students who were committed to sexual purity, saving sex for marriage, and then right after college, it's such a chaotic time, and we can compromise those values. And so I think just trying to debunk some of those myths of, like, you know, if I found my person, then my life will become stable. That's not true. And I think it can be easy to enter into a relationship because we're lonely and we want, you know, that companionship. I've seen students who hook up with former friends just because they were lonely. And so making a lot of times we talk about with our students, like, making the decision before there's even a choice, like Daniel in the Bible, like, I'm going to decide now that these are my values and I'm not going to compromise them. And then I don't know how we do this without the community of others helping us hold us accountable. And so I think finding friends who are in your former community who can hold you accountable if these are struggle areas. And then as you establish yourself in a new community, I always think we want to not date someone who doesn't have any friends. Like, that's important. Like, who are this person's friends? And does the community give a blessing on it? I think all of that is really important. You know, even what do our parents say? Even if our parents aren't Christian believers, we can, they know us. Many of our parents do know us well. And do they have reservations about the person that we're dating? So there's so much we could talk about here. I have a lot of thoughts, Neil, but yeah.
Well, that's good words. We're talking after college, navigating transitions, relationships, and faith. Erica Young writes, my guest today. Now, well, speaking of parents, let's talk about, navigating the relationship with the parents, because, you know, maybe, you know, it could be any number of things. You debt them sends you back home because you don't have the job you wanted, or maybe you got a degree that the parents weren't all that excited about, or whatever it might be. A lot of broken homes and relationships. So, what's your word about how the young adults after college can strengthen their relationship with their parents?
Yeah, I mean, I think like with any other topic, whether it's sexuality or, relating to parents, the exciting thing about right after college is a time to start anew, that, you know, anything that was in the past, we can move towards a new future. And so receiving much grace in this time. And I think with the relationship with our parents, we want to think about, what do I like about the relationship? What do I want to change about the relationship? And to acknowledge that everyone's in transition, even our parents are in transition. And so our parents are individual people with their own hopes and concerns. And so putting ourselves in their shoes and seeing that they're also in their own transition. And so I think starting to get a picture of the goal being this, a healthy, interdependent relationship, like moving from that dependence to independence to healthy interdependence with our parents. And if we're moving back home, which 26% of students are, how do we see that maybe as an opportunity to deepen and strengthen the relationships, not an opportunity to just freeload off our parents, but to deepen and strengthen those relationships? And I know there's people listening who maybe can't even imagine a restored relationship with their family members or don't have any relationship with parents. And so I just want to hold the hope that God can redeem and restore any relationship. I know that my 20s was time to work through some of my stuff with my own family, especially my relationship with my mom, who worked a lot growing up. And so for some reason, that for many people that I talk to, the 20s are like just stuff hits the fan, and we can either deal with our family junk or stuff it, and then it kind of comes up at a later time where we really, it could really affect our marriage or our future child rearing. And so I say, deal with the stuff now. Your future self will thank you.
Good word of war today. Erica, what's the best piece of advice you received at this point of transition in your life, maybe when you were from an adult a little farther down the road? What sticks out to you?
Yeah, I remember being with a conference or a group of people, and it was kind of the first time I heard someone say, like, it's okay to fail. And I remember, like, writing that down on a Post-it and putting it in my room. And I think there's just so much pressure of, like, what is it to adult? And, I see the students who crash and burn, I mean, they tell stories of, like, I just wanted to be an adult and I didn't really know how. And so I slipped into, this situation or that situation that was a negative situation. And I think to know, like, we don't have to put all this pressure on ourselves to figure it all out right away. We don't want to wander through our 20s, but it's okay to try things and realize that wasn't, that grad program wasn't for me. It's okay. We can move in a different direction. And then to know it's going to be okay. Like, even if it feels really hard right now, it's going to be okay. God hasn't left us or forsaken us. He's sovereign over all of it. He's in control. It's going to be okay. And I think that's the message I wanted to hold closely at that time, and I still need to know in my life that it's going to be okay.
I didn't realize that we could use adult as a verb. What does it mean to be to adult? I thought, wow, I've learned something new, or I'm afraid for the language of our nation. But no, maybe that's you know, it did make me wonder, though. I think you sort of addressed it early on the book after college about, you know, the getting out of the belief that it's all about us, because there is, you know, students are living in you know, in many ways kind of a bubble. So how do we break out of that?
Yeah, I remember Penn State did a slogan one time. It was called "It's Your Time," and I'm sure this wasn't intended, but I think it just sent this message like, "This is all about you." Like, you know, the paved paths across campus and the drink fountains and the office hours, like, it's all about you. And it will be a quick shock to the system if we're thinking that way. Life after college is not all about us. And in so many ways, the word we use is intentional. If you want to be intentional about living a life of faithfulness, you have to go after it. Like, you have to go after it, because it's not all about you. And I think so much of our angst in life, or our struggles, one 20-something called those years like the decade of angst. I think a lot of that comes from our own inward focus. So I think when we start to see, wow, this is so much bigger than me. It's not about me. God is so big, and I'm just a grasshopper. I'm so stinking small. We can let go of some of that angst and trust that there's such a much bigger story going on than our own little messy lives, and not to diminish the struggles that we're in, because those are real, but to reshape our view and to put our gaze on a saving God, it can blow things so much bigger than our own little confusing lives.
Some of the people that wrote comments about the book said things like this: it's a steady rudder for navigating the tumultuous post-college years. Another said, like reading a trail map before a hike. It challenges to think ahead and prepare for the essentials you need for the journey. I'm talking today with Erica Young Wrights, Director of Senior Exit, about the book After College, Navigating Transitions, Relationships, and Faith, published by University. Erica, thanks for your good work in this area and for the wise counsel today.
Neil, thanks so much for having me. Thank you for the ministry you have.
Listening to Connecting Faith, and, you know, as we think about transitions, this song just came to my mind. Give a listen.
No turning back, no turning back. I'm moving on, not looking back. I'm giving it all that I have. No turning back, no turning back. Though I may wander, I am not lost. So many distractions, but I look to the cross. I made up my mind.
With us in studio again, Leith Anderson, the National Association of Evangelicals and longtime pastor, who visits with us from time to time as we talk about the issues of the day and just try and understand maybe a fresh perspective on the world in which we live. And Leith, I wanted to talk a little bit about, in light of the political season that we're in the midst of, Donald Trump. I went to Mexico recently and spoke on immigration, and I know the National Association of Evangelicals has a lot to say about this issue as we look at it from a biblical perspective, because it doesn't seem like we, you know, obviously aren't getting that in the media. Help us understand a new framework for looking at issue like immigration.
Immigration or migration has always been part of the history of humanity, and is loaded into the Old Testament especially, but people have always moved around. But as a Christian, and especially as an evangelical Christian, what I want is that we not begin necessarily with the United States or how many undocumented immigrants are in the country, or whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, but rather that we begin with the Bible. So it's the Bible that directs us and advises us, and then we move into policy and politics. So, for example, There are 92 references in the Old Testament to immigrants and how we treat them. And it's astonishing what it says. But one of the most interesting lessons for me was a rabbi from New York that I listened to at a meeting. And he, you know, I've read the Bible most of my life, and he taught me something I didn't know. He said, in the Old Testament, there are only three commands to love. He said, we're never told or commanded to love our parents or our children or a husband or a wife. We are commanded to love the Lord your God, to love your neighbor, and to love the alien or the immigrant in the land. So as a Christian, that's where I always have to begin. And then decide, what do I have to do and what policies do I need to take based upon my obedience to what the Scripture says, not the current politics.
Well, if we were to allow that reframing of the issue into our understanding, I mean, that would transform things.
It would, and it's not to say, certainly not to say, that there should be open borders or that everybody is welcome or that people can break the law. Of course they can't. But is our attitude and are our actions rooted in what the Bible has to say, or are they primarily about what political candidates have to say?
Can we look at the Bible, before we look at politics and other areas as well? Just thinking that, you know, we get so wrapped up in the culture, the here and now, and, you know, we try to do a little Jesus overlay on the culture in which we live, as opposed to really looking at what does God's Word say first.
Well, there are many examples of that. Well, one of them has to do with refugees, that Jesus was a refugee. Another is that there are over 2,000 references in the Bible to the poor and how we treat the poor and how we relate to the poor. So it's always beginning with the Bible, not beginning with politics. And it's unfortunate that sometimes what people do is they begin with politics, make their political decision, and then they search the Bible to selectively find something that endorses what they have politically decided. To me, there is no integrity in that. As someone who takes the Bible as my authority for life, I've got to begin with the Word of God, and that has to inform and shape my political views.
You're talking about refugees. It was just, I noticed just recently, a year ago, that Alan Kurdi's body washed ashore in Turkey, the young little boy. That picture captured so much of the heartbreak going on with the refugees fleeing out of Syria. Maybe say a word about what the church can do to help in the Syrian refugee crisis.
Well, it's difficult. We have one of the largest mass migrations that we've had since World War II. And seeing a preschooler's body on the shores of Asia Minor, of Turkey, in a biblical land, it's just heartbreaking. And they've been rebroadcast lately, so we've seen those pictures again. I think that we need to recognize, again, that we look to the Bible and the church first, and only secondly to what is the current news and the politics of it. So just to explain that the church has really been engaged in this issue historically, but in the United States, there are only 9 agencies that bring refugees into this country, only 9. And 6 of them are religious groups. One of those is a Jewish group, a Hebrew group that's part of their name, and the other 5 are Christian groups. So it's a Lutheran group, it's an Episcopal group, it's World Relief, which is the evangelical group, the only declared evangelical group of the 9. And what we've experienced, and I'm part of World Relief, what we've experienced is that while governors and politicians have had lawsuits and debates, that churches across America have stepped up and done what they've always done. They're not the ones who decide how many refugees there are or who comes or who doesn't. The federal government does that. But churches have been astonishing in how welcoming they've been and how transformative. And I think that we need to recognize that the awful things, unspeakable things that are happening in Syria and the Middle East, that we need to be careful that we don't punish the victims of ISIS for the sins of ISIS. That we need to recognize that virtually all of these refugees are people who are trying to escape to save the lives of preschool boys so that they don't die on the shores of Turkey.
Speaking of young boys dying, young boys and girls, Chicago surpassed their homicide total from 2015 already, still 4 months to go. Is there a place that the church can have in turning around this terrible scourge in this major city?
Well, Chicago has many aspects to what's going on. It used to be my home. I went to college there. And it's not just Chicago, but Chicago's making the news because of its an extraordinary murder rate. There have been more murders so far this year in Chicago than in New York and Los Angeles combined. And both New York and Los Angeles, I mean, those cities are huge and together certainly much larger than Chicago. I think one of the most interesting pieces of this is every time you see a news story, whether it's in your own community or in Chicago, I guess I can't say every time, but virtually every time I see it, they interview a pastor. The conversations are outside a church building, usually of the ethnicity of that community and the family that has lost someone. They turn to the church. And how good is that? And these churches, they're doing what's right. They're seeking to help people in the midst of clashes in terms of gangs and poverty and racism. And God bless these churches. So what everybody else needs to do, not in that community, is pray for those churches. And our own churches, if elsewhere, why don't we contact these churches and not tell them what we think they ought to do? We ought to contact them and ask, how can we help? How can we pray? What do you need? We just don't know. But you do know because you're in the midst of it. Now, are we as Christians and churches, are we going to shape policing policies and things like that? Maybe, but probably not. But we can help the churches that are the bedrock of these communities.
Leith Anderson is the president of the National Association of Evangelicals and longtime pastor at the Wooddale Church in Union Prairie, Minnesota, and is a regular contributor to Connecting Faith. And we'll connect with him again in a couple of weeks. We also spent some time today talking with Erica Young Wrights about her great book called After College, about making transitions. And we have a good word from Steve Douglas right now.
We're called to love God and to know Him, and to be in a relationship with Him, and that's got to be our first priority.
Sometimes we think that an understanding of God's will and direction for our lives can take a lot of time. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas, and today on Making Your Life Count, Louis Giglio gives us a simple shortcut in discovering God's plan for our lives.
My job is not to find God's future for my life, to discover God's will for my life. My job is to say yes to my Father. That's what I'm responsible for.
As Louis says, cling to God on a daily basis.
If He gave me a blueprint and a set of diagrams, I would run on my own and try to do what He asked me to do. God says, I'm going to give you enough light for today in a big enough task that you're going to have to cling to me, because the task is going to be bigger than anything you think you can do in and of yourself.
Even when we're faced with daunting tasks, we are equipped to handle them when we rely on God and His promises.
Good word from Louis Giglio and Steve Douglas. Great word from Leith Anderson, and good conversation with Erica Young Wrights.
A good food for thought today.
Yeah, a lot. So hope you eat well today. Yeah. If you missed part of it because you were doing lunch or your lunch hour is over, you can always, of course, find the interviews. We post them on our website, the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. So you can find it there here after the show. And tomorrow's show, we're going to talk sort of in a related area, because we're going to talk with Dr. Walt Mueller, who's for over 35 years been president of the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. And it's basically, we'll talk Pokemon Go.
That's the thing we really want to understand.
What is that about?
That's the current culture, at least the current trend.
Right. So we'll get to that and more on tomorrow's Connecting Faith. Hope that you'll be here with us. And a reminder, of course, again, just a week away from our fall share fundraiser. That's a strategic time in the life of this listener-supported ministry. And you know, if you're new to Faith Radio, as we know that many listeners are, we just want to say welcome. Now, you're listening today because people in years past have given by faith and the conviction and generosity so that this station could be available to you, and or the stream online, so that you could listen and be blessed and encouraged in your faith and grow deeper, helping you connect faith to life every day. That is what we're all about here at Faith Radio.
It's been amazing to see the expansion now that we're in Hartford, Connecticut, and our online capabilities keep growing, and it's all to your generous support. So be in prayer about that for sure next week.
It starts next Tuesday, and looking forward to hearing from you. You can find out more about us and even make your gift online right now, myfaithradio.com. And thanks again for listening to Connecting Faith.